SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, back at Pimlico, and I'm laughing because I thought I was sending Casey the note, you know, to raise Scully and DeRosa to go with the live in person Brisnet Twin Spires representative. That's Vance Hansen. Do we really need them? Do we need Scully and DeRosa?
I don't think so. I think we can wing it here.
That's a good attitude, and we do want their input. They've been inputting all the way on the Triple Crown trail. We touched base with you a couple of times, and is this an annual? Do you come annually to?
I don't. This is my fourth overall trip to Pimlico, only the second for the Preakness. So. Having a wonderful time this week. We obviously wish the weather was better, but yeah, it's normally Scully, Ed, and I trade off coming up to Pimlico, and this happened to be my year.
What other reasons have you come here? You said if you've only come for a couple of Preaknesses and
couple Preaknesses in college, I wanted to come to Pimlico. Hadn't been here before, so I made a little day trip up from Washington, and then second time around, I actually planned to come here for the Pimlico special, bought a plane ticket like a month or two in advance, and then they canceled the race. So that was back in the days when they were having a little funding problems for the special. And so I made the trip anyway, but cut down my day at the races from 2 days to one.
Are you from D.C.?
No, I just went there for a spring break one time, had a free ticket. I know it's...
I love it.
I'm not the I wasn't the Florida guy then to go to Florida or Vegas in spring break. I went to Washington D.C. spent a week, took the train up to Baltimore, and then took in a day to races at Pimlico.
Well done. Where are you from? I don't know if I've ever asked you this.
I'm from the Twin Cities originally, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Very good. So and you've got to you must have grown up as Canterbury was in its formative years.
Absolutely. I really got hooked around 1986, 87 when I was 9, 10 years old. Went out there consistently, and a lot of good folks are around that people know, and familiar faces across the country are all Canterbury alumni, and I happen to be one of them.
Well, the Sampson family has done an amazing job. The experiment with the takeout, really a noble effort, and we root openly for the team there. And in fact, since a Canterbury mention came up, we can also note, I gave you some of the stakes from the other day, but they're going to run the 10,000 Lakes and the Lady Slipper on Saturday as the stake program starting to stoke up at Canterbury. I've got to get to Canterbury at some point. That's on the list. The biggest success story in the game when it comes to live attendance.
Absolutely, and that even goes back to the very early years of the track. I think the first year they averaged about 13,000 people, handle over $1 million, and that was the case at least for the first couple of years before business started taking a downward trend. But yeah, that's for Mike, and I worked a nice summer intern there for two seasons in college.
Did you really?
I did.
Nice.
And that was always an emphasis, get the crowds out, promote promotions. It's a family affair at Canterbury. From the get-go in the mid-80s, it was an attractive appeal to families across the spectrum, whether you were a big better or small or a $2 better, as a lot of the folks in Minnesota are. So,
well, it's a good story, and of course the deal that they made with the Shakopee.
The Midwonkan tribe, I think. I might be mispronouncing.
I think it is the Shakopee, isn't it?
The town is Shakopee, yes.
Yeah.
But the tribal name is Midwonkan or something along those lines.
I thought the Indian. I thought they were Shakopees. I thought the...
You might know better than I do.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I just like saying Shakopee and Chickasaw.
Chickasaw.
It is also fun, and the group up at Emerald also is a fun. They're just it's a healthy era for the tribes.
Yeah, that and, that was a terrific marketing deal Canterbury put in.
Very much.
A 10-year deal. It's probably at least halfway through now, if not more. But, yeah, it's supplemented purses quite well. And probably the quality of racing day in and day out up there now is probably the best it's ever been.
Oh, there's no doubt. And the Oaklawn, you know, the people that are Oaklawn players January through April, and then they turn their attention toward Kentucky, toward Prairie Meadows, and to Canterbury, and to Chicago a little bit too. But there's a direct link, especially if you're Mac and Hugh Robertson followers, you're all over Canterbury's action. We can't find the Mutt and Jeff back in the office, the new office. And did you have to move to Louisville too?
No, just Ed.
Oh, really?
Yep. And James and I are still in Lexington.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize that there was still that option still existed.
Yep. We have two floors there on Corporate Drive. One's kind of a call center, and then upstairs, mostly programmers and some.
How about that?
And some of the old BristNet people, Pedigree Research Department, and then our editorial department.
So you don't have to get dragged to all kinds of greasy spoons by Ed for lunch anymore.
I do not, no.
Nice. You can go to Ramsey's, though. Go to Ramsey's.
Ramsey's is terrific.
Meat and three, baby.
Absolutely.
What's your side dishes?
Stewed tomatoes is always a great option.
Well, you're definitely from Minnesota. Stewed tomatoes? Come on! Okra? No okra?
I've tried the okra before, and not quite my favorite.
Mac and cheese?
A little bit of that.
What is that? Is the good steakhouse in Minneapolis?
Murray's.
Still there?
Yes. I actually had my wife there over the Christmas holiday.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's terrific.
I've been there in a million years.
Half a block down from the Target Field baseball stadium. So, yeah. Free plug for Murray's. It's quite an experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. I haven't been to Minneapolis in forever, and I mean 86, 87 maybe.
That's a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Up against the baggy Kirby Puckett,
Homer Hankies, 1987. I went to Game 6 actually.
Nice,
so.
Nice. Vance Hanson, who I just it's funny. Much like my. Pushing Scully's work. I mean, Scully worked anonymously for years with the Kentucky Derby report, and I didn't tell anybody because why would I want to let anybody know where all this good information is coming? And you were an entry on that front. I was learning all kinds of stuff from you. Your work has been fabulous, and you touch on some international, which is obviously a fascination to you. You do some pedigree work, but you've got that sort of that tangential interest in the game and the area that must have drawn you in, but it has translated into a good handicapping opinion.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
You can admit that. Go ahead. You can admit.
Yeah, I can admit that.
Talk about about the approach and when you first. I mean, how long have you been with BristNet?
It's been 10 years, and then I was at the Daily Racing Form in the Lexington office a little over 8 years.
It's funny. I've got some old. Well, every so often, I'm glad you said that because I had forgotten. Every so often, I'll go to an old form, and I've got a stack of them in my office, and there'll be a Vance Hanson byline.
Yeah. Yeah. Closer looks.
Absolutely.
Did a lot of those. And
you and Kachulis and my man Steve Grabowski.
Yep.
The Pocky, Brian Pockman.
Yep. And in our office, we had Steve Klein and Bill Howard and Kim Nelson, Kristen Sadler, and Elliot Safdie. Those are our final grouping there.
And of course, they would keep the king, Artie Gropper. They wouldn't let him in an office. Art was kept. He's kept in a cage. I think
he worked from home. I think
yes, he does. He does work from home. And there was a point when they were forcing him to come in, and it was ugly. So I think he's back working from home.
Okay.
Well, and did you have anything to? You're not old enough to have worked on MetroTurf.
No.
Because that's where the closer looks came from.
Okay, this is the first I've heard about that.
Oh, sure. MetroTurf was a snapshot periodical that Dave Litvin came from, for instance, and that's where I first became aware of Litvin. But those closer looks, when it was incorporated into the form, that's came from MetroTurf. which was just a great little, like, I think they were like maybe $2, and it was maybe 16 pages, maybe less even, and it was tabloid size, and it was a terrific, if you were just going to like play a double or you a partial card, or you know, you only had, like, we were, you know, I was working in Manhattan, and so you'd run out and you could play for, you know, 25, 30 minutes at lunch, and you'd get MetroTurf, and picked up a lot. There's a lot of, every winter I promise to do in fact, Figs Form came up the other day. I've promised to do an alumni show with MetroTurf, Figs Form, Racing Times, you know, all of the defunct papers that, you know, that sort of brought us to this, you know, to this current era. And there's a lot of people smiling, laughing. I've got MetroTurf still at home. I've got like a treasury of retired papers.
That would be a terrific listen, I think.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
And yeah, closer looks. I mean, in our office, we covered the tracks from Ohio to Oklahoma. That was kind of our geographical input. So, I mean, we obviously got to do Fairgrounds, Oakland, Churchill, Keeneland were our top tracks to do closer looks with. But in general, when you're kind of dealing with the smaller, minor tracks and the less expensive horses, they were kind of a tough write sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, tough handicapping, but we trudged through it.
You could, and what was nice about, and what still is nice in the forum about closer looks is there's hints, and particularly if you follow certain, you know, certain guys, and you know, for me, Kachulis, Pachman, Grabowski, if you read them enough, you, much like clocker notes, there's certain terminology and certain way, you know, a horse is written about in those two lines, in, you know, succinctly, that you can tell. And it's the same thing with Andy Harrington. I mean, in National Turf, I mean, when he talks about a certain way a horse is moving, or it gives off a bit of a buzz. Mike Welch and I, you know, we talk about that too. For your handicapping, and as we talk about the race tomorrow, from your background, what would you call yourself as a handicapper style-wise?
I think the two things that I concentrate most on are class and speed. Conventional old-school handicapping. Sometimes I think the finding who the classiest horse isn't can be hidden sometimes, and that's where when I do cash tickets, it's usually horses whose back class is pretty hidden. So, you know, if you dig deep enough, you know, look through the company lines, find out, you know, who they beat, you know, who they may have narrowly lost to. You don't want to go too far in the distant past, but, you know, within the last year or so, sometimes you can find some nuggets.
And on the pedigree side, because, I mean, you don't do what Kelly Riley does, per se, but you've got a penchant for diving into some pedigree and utilizing it when it comes to this time of year, the horses that are going to be stretching out from, you know, 2-year-old form and going on with it, becoming 9-furlong horses, 10-furlong horses, and then when we get to New York, 12-furlong. And I know, you know, having read you long enough, that you know, that's a portion that is entering into your decision making.
Yeah, and I really dig deep into pedigrees when I'm assigned to do the Royal Ascot, which you've brought up in the past, and the International. And, you know, looking at the 2-year-old races there, that can be very difficult. I obviously look for pedigree angles, looking to see who the mare has produced in the past, whether any of the parentage may have run at Ascot, you know, handled the course itself. And those are always major clues and tip-offs for me, and sometimes you get a price for it.
Have you gone over?
I have not. However, I am taking a trip in September. So,
For champions?
Actually, it's taking a few days, going to Epsom Downs.
Nice.
On a weekday card. Hopefully hop over to Paris the next day, and then I've got tickets for the St. Ledger at Doncaster, and hopefully we have a triple crown on the line with Saxon Warrior.
Very cool.
That would be awesome.
Now they got to just cooperate. Let's turn our attention and get your thoughts on tomorrow and post-Derby. Where did you shake out, and how are we looking at at this Preakness group tomorrow?
Like a lot of people, I think this is Justify's race to lose. Chipped well. I saw him coming off the van the other day, bouncing around. His gallops over the main track here have been really good. Bob Baffert is confident. Like Bob said in an interview yesterday, it's all about the break, and if he breaks well again, he should sit a good trip. You know, he's not going to be he's outside of the other speed. He's going to sit a good trip. He just looks a little too tough to beat to me. And so basically I'm taking the approach, you know, can I beat Good Magic for second?
You're the second person today to bring to angle it that way.
Yeah. Can you beat him for second? And if not, can you find the third place horse and, you know, do a straight try? So.
Now that, and we have concentrated this week and even coming out of last week, knowing that it was going to be a modest sized field, and, you know, trying to urge people to, you know, to break down a barrier of betting a $20 straight try, because for the modest sized player, it's so foreign that you know, they're, and because for years, of course, we've been trying to utilize and merchandise using a 50 cent, particularly for tries, using 50-cent denomination to, you know, be able to surgically build tickets. But, you know, then asking or urging people to, you know, to punch a $20 straight try, and people, they get hinky.
Yeah, and but one thing that should encourage them, I mean, just look back at some of the additions that we've had here at the Preakness. I mean, look at American Pharaoh. You keep Dortmund and the Derby runner-up off the board, and you cash a nice ticket, and then 10 years ago, Big Brown won at about the same odds that Justify will start at tomorrow, and $36 exacta, trifecta was huge in that particular race, so yeah, take a swing at it.
We talked about this using Funnyside, who was overwhelmingly likely, and then even further ended up, you know, running up the score because Jose Santos really felt compelled just to shove it up the Miami Herald's ass and you know, completely put to bed the idiotic controversy. And the key to that was finding Midway Road at 20-1 and $120 exact.
Yeah, and I vaguely recall hitting that. Just because there's a heavy odds on favorite in the Preakness or any type of favorite doesn't mean that it's not a money making race.
Any other considerations in there underneath that, you know, for those playing supers, or, you know, how can you see a couple of the oddballs in here, whether it's a Lone Sailor or Tenfold, the Lucas runners?
Yeah.
And Diamond King, which I haven't given any consideration to, which is not fair, and Quip.
Yep. I think I was listening just a little bit to your interview with Nick on the previous segment, and I think he mentioned Bravazo, and he's kind of been my long shot coming into this race that I kind of like. Thought his Risen Star was a pretty good performance, and then obviously threw the dud in the Louisiana Derby, and Lucas says he basically trained up to the Derby not having an adequate prep, and it was like bringing a horse to Kentucky off a 10-week layoff, and obviously outran his odds. It's nearly 67-1, finishing sixth. And Lucas obviously has a expert track record of bringing horses back on short rest. And I think that prep race did him a world of good. A bit of an unknown outside of the Derby on a wet track, but he just seems to be coming into this race in a good upward form cycle.
Well, he comes, and he also basically arrives with an oxbow, with the oxbow trip, very much, the obscured performance. So why not? I get it. What else do we have before we wrap? Vance Hansen with us for Brisnet, Twin Spires, where players win, and other horses this weekend that you want to bet?
Today in the Pimlico Special, I think Something Awesome has just turned into a different horse since joining Jose Corrales' barn. You know, 4 for 5, two of them on and off tracks. He should get a little bit of pace to run at later this afternoon. So that's one I'm kind of looking at. Tomorrow in the Dixie, World Approval, he should win the race if he's back to his best form. And trainer Mark Cassie, I've seen quotes where he says he thinks he's got him back. But, you know, I wasn't as impressed with the Tampa race in February.
In retrospect,
and I think he should have won that race by a larger margin, considering the field he was facing,
or with more authority. It was kind of a slog, and when you look back after the Kilroe, it became apparent that, you know what, that was a signal that he even if he needed it, that is he the same horse? And Cassie seems very comfortable and confident going into tomorrow that he's got him back, and it wouldn't be the first time that he righted the ship. And this family,
it's terrific.
Mrs. Weber's family, the history, when you look at Miesque and you look at Zsa's approval, they have thrown in clunkers. And then the pendulum has swung back. So maybe the return here, the softish turf, gets him back. It's one of tomorrow's tough questions.
It is, and he handled that soft turf really well in the 4-star David Saratoga last summer. Looking at alternatives, I looked at Fireway, but he seems to be kind of an aqueduct-centric horse. He really thrives on that turf, not so much outside of it. Frostmourne might be a pretty good bet tomorrow. Probably a little bit better than he showed at Keeneland last time, and ran some really good races last year, especially against Yoshida, who we all know ran so well 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
So he's going to be one I'm looking at tomorrow for the Dixie.
Well, I'll tell you what, the light pouring in here from the window, and whether it was Vance that delivered the I can't call it sunshine, but we can say it is a brightening of the morning. That's the brightest it's been in 3 days. So we hope that everybody has a bright weekend, and the Brisnet team, and of course Gus Alonso's analysis, and Rich Eng, both up at Brisnet, and all the products you rely on, as well as the analysis and the blog role at Twin Spires, you and Scully and Ed and who else?
Scott Shapiro.
Shop, that's right. Shapper the Capper.
Yep, and Kelly Riley, I'm sure, will be chiming in as well. So. Lots of great products at Brisnet. Check it out.
She'll be pedigreeing it up. Twinspires.com and all the info at the blog roll. Invaluable. Vance Hansen, I'm absolutely appreciative of the time. And let me get the smiling face that so I can put it on. You got a reflection on your glasses. So you got to, I think, lean forward a little bit. There you go. Nice. Vance Hansen, everybody. For those of you that don't know Vance in the flesh.
At VP Hansen, you can follow me on Twitter.
They're already following you. I've told them for years now.
I know.
We'll get you back for Ascot, of course. Absolutely.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Vance Hansen, and we'll stay right here. Rick Hammerly is standing by, and Hammer's ears, they may be burning because I talked about him earlier. They may be ringing from his proximity to Sting and Bono and Sting, and not Sting, Bono and The Edge at the U2 show the other day. And here he is. Hammer, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good morning to you. Good morning to everybody. Actually, I'm at the home studio, otherwise known as the office in the garage today. So
nice.
No entries today. So we're taking advantage of it, but it's all good. My ears are ringing. But that's okay.
You were right on top of it. You were like three rows in.
Well, at the Forum, which is, still one of the greatest, greatest venues ever for rock and roll. They, when they have open floor GA, which is the only place I really like to watch a show, you can wander around. And they have two stages. U2 always has two stages with a platform, runway connecting them both. So wherever you are, wherever you want to go, if you want to get close, you just wait it out and, they'll come to you. So, great show. Last night, if they're touring near you, go see it. This was a much more U2 music concert. But last year at the Rose Bowl, it's kind of they try to get a little too political. And, I don't go to music. Most people don't go to see music and hear speeches. But this show was typical U2, just rocking. It was great. And then actually last night, you missed my Twitter. My second tweet in 2 months was I went to see with Gina Steven Stills, and
very cool.
With Judy Collins, and I'll tell you what. Now there, I actually was sitting in the second seat back from the stage, and wow, yeah, this was. I mean, put this. I didn't sit down at U2. I didn't stand up for this one. It was in like a little supper club, and what a treat just to kind of, you know, it was more nostalgic. Obviously, bring a lot of memories from all those songs from way back when. But I'll tell you what, he can still rock it. And I'll tell you, Judy Collins, she still got the pipes, man. It was really cool. So kind of a little back to back there, getting ready for Preakness tomorrow. And hopefully, you know, we'll see some more greatness.
Well, you know, the Wonder
you know,
Horse.
You're there. What's that?
The Wonder Horse.
The Wonder Horse, exactly. And, you know, this is hoping, you know, I'm hoping because this one I'm just a fan. I'm just watching. I've been thinking about making a bet. We're taking entries on Saturday, so be a little distracted. Obviously, watch the race. But hoping this horse just, you know, take us from the sports page to the front page, so to speak, and the public can, you know, maybe start getting more enamored with the horse. But one step at a time, you know, still run them, as we always say. And you know, I'm glad to see good magic in there. You know, good magic. I think it's going to be a real. I think it's going to be a good race. I'm glad to see him in there, and you know, to you know, kind of. Make justify honest and, you know, make him beat a good horse and good magic is definitely a good horse. A lot of people I see writing him off or this is going to be a walk in the park. I mean, obviously I think justify is just super, but good magic. Let's look. And, you know, Chad Brown running him back in 2 weeks, obviously he's doing great. And, you know, we all like to see him run on a fast track, but you know, that's not what we're getting. So, they both showed they had a little bit of a liking to an off track. We'll see how it goes. I mean, if you're telling me the weather might look better than it should, it's supposed to be dumping there right now, but it's not, huh?
No, right now, knock on wood, it's in fact brighter than it's been. I mean, there's plenty of overcast, and I'm sure we're still going to get some, but for now, it's okay. And there's a little bit of a wind, too, which will help, you know, take some of the moisture off the top of the racetrack. I mean, it's been sealed. As long as we only get mist, the footing, I think, you know, will be reasonable. Yesterday this track was in rough shape.
Yeah, it looked that way on TV. And, you know, when it comes down to race time, I'm sure for horses like Justify that like to show a little speed, they'd rather have it, you know, sloppy than good. You know, I can skip over the top and not get stuck in a, you know, kind of a bog type track.
Yes, so, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Well, so we'll see how they handle that. But that's good. For everybody that's not going to the Preakness, that's, you know, west of the Mississippi, we have a big contest tomorrow at Santa Anita for the World Horse Players Tour. For some reason, this contest has really taken hold. And everybody's coming out to Santa Anita that's not going to the Preakness. I tried to get Jonathan Kitchen on this morning to kind of preview what he's been up to. He's part of this TV pilot that is
right.
Going to be shown as well, but he was busy working on that. But, you know, contest, but actually there's a couple of cool things that's going on in this contest as I read the rules again. There's no entry fee, so to speak, but $5,000 live bankroll, meaning everything goes into the pot. There's no, you know, no rake. And it's a 2-day contest, but it's a different 2-day contest. I'm hoping to get 120, 150 players in, and if there's 120 players, that means there's 120 players. There's only one entry per player, which I totally think that's the way to go, just my feeling. And you can do a rebuy, which is, you know, pokerish. And so if you buzz out the first day and get zeroed out, you can re-up for $6,000 for the next day. Not the next day, to continue on for that day, excuse me, because at the end of the first day, the top eight money earners are going to move on to a final table type situation, and the cash out they did, and then they'll be, you know, given poker chips, so to speak, depending on how much money they have left, and then they'll go at it wind betting only. But you know, they got to keep strict rules on collusion, and which is kind of cool. And all the players' bets from the entire contest will be made available as well, so people can see, you know, what different people did during the day. But I tell you, it's great. You know, basically, you know, probably reiterating what you and Pete talked about. But anyway, we're getting closer to it, and you know, Nate told me, hey, bring it up. So anybody, welcome. You know, like I said, if you're near, come on out to San Anita. We got a $495,000 single ticket jackpot in the pick six as well, which continues on today. So, you know, we gave them 12 races on Saturday. It's actually a pretty good betting card, contest or no contest. So I think there's going to be a lot of action out at Santa Anita tomorrow. So come on out.
Hammer, final thought on Preakness. I know that Jimmy Ventura sent me a note, and he's got Quip as his price key underneath Justify. What about you?
If I had to pick another one, it'd be Lone Sailor, just to kind of maybe pick up the pieces later. But, you know, my eyes are going to be on that 7 gate when it opens, and if Justify comes out cleanly, then, you know, I'd probably just be watching him. I'm in fan mode this weekend, and after this weekend, hopefully we'll get a little bit crazier going into the Belmont. But, you know, this is what we wait for these days, and I'm so pumped up to tune in tomorrow and kick back and, hopefully watch greatness. The Wonder Horse is back.
Well, looking forward, and we're looking forward to getting you into New York. Not like you to miss the first two legs, but we'll see you for Belmont, and we'll talk to you next week and see where things stand.
But thanks, Stephen. Once again, your coverage all week has just been great. And keep the guests coming. And you have a great Preakness yourself, and everybody else, stay dry if you're going to the races.
Well, and right now, keep knocking wood. We're dodging storms, dodging bullets. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go. You can be absolutely stage left, stage center with Hammer going to these shows. Right now, we'll stay right here and close out these 5 days that have just whistled by, and a very, very much a Mid-Atlantic way to wrap things up. And that includes Frank Vespi, who, of course, has spearheaded the racing biz, has made it a absolute invaluable part of the coverage in the region, and happy to get Frank back. Haven't talked to you in too long. My fault.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Much appreciated. Good to see you down here in Baltimore.
Love coming here, and we have Virginia certified. We've got a Virginia Equine Alliance when it comes to Nick on, and Nick, glad you're here.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. It's always a great weekend. Always look forward to it. It's a race I can make. It's not too far away, and it's just a wonderful. The hospitality here is just always outstanding. You've been echoing that all week, and I just love coming up here this weekend. It's one of my favorite weekends.
Well, and you're gonna be the spirit guide when it comes to the return to Colonial. We're anticipating you're gonna be the guy. You and Woodbury and Debbie Easter and everybody that has been just so excited by what has transpired in short order. I mean, for all the machinations and frustrations, and it also, Frank, can be said of Maryland, life, you know, breathed back into Virginia, and some very clever concept, including that certification program, which we talk about all the time. And then, of course, Frank, you've been sitting front and center for what's gone on here. And I had that conversation with Alan Foreman the other morning, which was extensive. And I had conversations where, you know, we were basically preparing the plot to bury Maryland, and the next thing you know, the pendulum swings.
It's been remarkable to see what's happened in Maryland, and I think we're going to see it in Virginia too. And what I think you really learn is, in horse racing, we've spent so much time over the years at each other's throats, and when we can stop doing that and work together, you suddenly find a lot of good things can happen. We've seen that in Maryland. We've seen that with the purses here, the racing quality, the handle, the facilities, particularly Laurel, just the breeding, a ton of good things going on here. We're starting to see that pick up in Virginia as well. And it's really a testament to people saying, you know, we got to work together. We've got to hang together or we're going to hang separately.
Well, and you were ahead of the curve in terms of the racing biz and conceiving the website and basically, you know, being a drum beater for, you know, what the Mid-Atlantic region represents. I mean, as Alan talked about the other morning, this concentration of racetracks from New Jersey, and now we can say again to Virginia, is the most intensive and competitive, I mean, in terms of reaching for horses. Absolutely. But at the same time, there's a lot of, you know, interactive cooperation and cross, you know, cross the conditions to consider Delaware, and then, you know, that you've got an A, you've got a B, and you've got C. I mean, in terms of levels of competition.
Yeah, no, you're right. I appreciate the kind words, and I mean, I think, you know, one of the things we really see is, you know, these are, to a significant extent, the same horses in Maryland and Pennsylvania and Delaware at Monmouth, you know, and even to a lesser extent at Penn National or Charlestown. And, you know, you see horsemen figured this out years ago. We've got to go wherever the races are that fit for us. The industry didn't figure it out years ago, but now it's really starting to. And you mentioned Alan Foreman, the Match series. We're partnering with Match on some things with the racingbiz.com. And that's a significant step because it's taking the racing side and saying, hey, let's all work together. Let's coordinate some schedules. Let's do some things like that. Let's do some co-marketing. And we could all benefit from this. And I think that is the wave of the future. One hopes if Mid-Atlantic racing has a bright future, that is it. It's that coordination.
Well, and when you fold in, obviously, what's going to happen at Monmouth and in New Jersey, and no matter how much revenue is generated by the sports betting dollar, Delaware was one of the, people don't even realize, was a grandfathered environment and have been running the parlay cards through their lottery for years. But this is, you know, we haven't talked much about it, and I got to get Glazer because it's just fun to let Rich Glazer out of a cage and let him just, you know,
let
run
Rich
off.
Be Rich.
Yes, exactly. And but Delaware stands to benefit from this. West Virginia, which was fishtailing a little bit, they're ready to go. They're going to throw the switch almost as fast as New Jersey. In Maryland, they're going to need a referendum.
Yes.
And there's concern that they can't even get a referendum in place on the ballot for November in time, which would then be tabled till 2020,
yeah,
which is a little going to put you behind the curve a little bit. Something tells me it'll make its way to the, you know, the Annapolis. There's a history of getting things done adroitly in Maryland. I mean, yeah, in some cases it results in governors in jail, but that's neither here nor there.
So that may be beyond our scope here.
Exactly. We don't have to worry about that. But there's no doubt that Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, this whole group, it's vital. And there's a great cultural history and support and mentality, the green space, the breeding. There's so many things about it that just are right. And coming here is always a highlight. Let's use the last 5 minutes of our 5 days, 15 hours of coverage from here in Maryland, and let's talk Preakness, the reason for the season. And your thoughts coming in here with another Baffert Derby winner, and does he go 5 for 5?
You want to take the first cut at that, Nick?
Well, I'm going to go against him. I like Good Magic here. He was my Derby horse. I'm going to stay with him. Yeah, Justify, if you saw his run up the stretch the first time, I mean, there was nobody around him. I think he has a bit of an intimidation presence among these other horses.
Big horse.
They don't want to run behind him. They don't even want to run beside him. He just seems to have that presence. But he's never been worse than second in any of his starts. So
early.
I think at some point, You know, luck may catch up to him. He may have to fight the mud. He may have to fight, you know, a bad start or something like that. And so I'm kind of staying with Good Magic here, who showed some tactability in the Derby and has shown that through his career. And I'm just being a little stubborn, flat out, on Good Magic. But I like the way he's been preparing this week. I like when they come early to Pimlico and kind of get acclimated to the conditions. He's been in the rain all week.
Well, and I mentioned that he's actually, you know, one of the things we hear so often is that Bafford, who for years came early to places like Churchill, Bafford said, you know, it's gotten so that the track you race on Saturday isn't the same one that you train on. The advantage for Good Magic, to an extent, is that he was on the peanut buttery surface when it was heavy and gloppy the other day, and he's been on it for a couple of mornings in a row with the sealed surface. So he's actually seen, you know, because one of the things Zoe Cadman brought up in Rich Migliori earlier today was the fact that you could have a heavy drying out surface, and we've seen that here before, and this is a dull and heavy clump. You know, you'll hear it from the hooves. There's a distinct sound of the hooves smacking on that thick, heavy going.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, how the going is going to affect different horses is going to be a little bit of a tricky question. I mean, I think everything Nick said is right. It's just, on the one hand, I want to say, you know, this is an obvious comment. It's going to be hard to beat Justify. He's really good. He hasn't done a thing wrong. On the other hand, I was saying this to some people the other day. To me, Nyquist was one of the most impressive Derby winners I've seen. The way he sat and let other horses go do whatever they wanted, inhaled them at his will. I thought, boy, this horse is unbelievable. And he came here and got beat. So these things happen. And you know, you're going to be looking at one to two morning line. You're looking at 2 to 5 or less. It might be worth taking a swing, you know, looking around a little bit. I mean, I think Quip is an interesting horse who, you know, they skipped the Derby to be here. And talking with Rodolphe Brisset yesterday, he was saying, you know, I would have liked to go to the Derby, but, you know, the horse really was telling us no, and now he's telling us yes. And you know, so I like that horse a little bit. I'm going to just throw in a ridiculous long shot just for fun. Like tenfold a little bit.
It's not ridiculous. I'm using him.
Yeah, I mean, I like him a little bit. You know, the only three horses that didn't run Derby weekend have come back to win the Preakness in the last 21 years. They had all made either 3 or 4 starts prior to the Preakness. He's made 3. Didn't run badly in Arkansas, can take a step forward here. I think he's worth looking at a little bit at a big price.
I write about the unique win angle when it comes to the horses exiting the Derby, either what I call either forgivable performances or, you know, successful performances. And, you know, the three horses in the last 16 runnings all have got, Cloud Computing was an honest, you know, jump in type, as was Red Bullet, mm-hmm. going a little further back. But, you know, you look at Rachel Alexandra, that was a mitigating circumstance of her spinning out of the Oaks, being purchased by Jess Jackson and showing up here. Otherwise, Mind That Bird is going
probably
to win.
Wins, yep.
And then, of course, there's Barbaro and yep. the circumstances around Barbaro. And it's not as if Bernardini wasn't a nice horse. But the you know, 13 of the last 16 Preaknesses have been won by Derby horses. However, there's been that price that has invaded year after year. And so finding a tenfold, or a lot of people, Bravazo's gotten so much talk that I don't think he's going to be, from an exotic standpoint, he'll still be an okay price, but he's going to be, I think, keyed under a lot of Justify over Bravazo, you know, type tickets. TheRacingBiz.com, and Frank, that's what you're using as your Twitter handle.
Yep, we're at The Racing Biz, and we're also on Flickr, Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing. You find us everywhere.
Everywhere. And who else is corresponding, by the way? Is it just how many?
We've got Nick. We've got Teresa Gennaro. We've got Dougie McCoy in Delaware. We've got Jim Hague in New Jersey.
Gary Quill,
who does our handicapping. We got Teddy Black, who's doing a lot of West Virginia stuff. So we got people kind of all at Linda Doherty in Pennsylvania. So we got people all over the place.
The elusive Doug McCoy, who for years I would try to find to do Tampa for the forum. And I never... I think in 10 years of trying, I think I had Doug, I got Doug one time, I think. I
could get you, Doug. If
well,
you,
it's too late Doug. Now. Although Tampa seems to be still running. I don't know who's there or what's going on.
It goes on and on.
It's crazy. Well, it all has to do with the simulcast, what do they call it, the designee. And
right.
Whatever. Thanks so much.
Hey, congratulations yesterday.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. That was we bred that horse, and a real thrill to get that done, considering how many foals we lost, and it's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. As always, just a delight to be here, and we wish everybody the best of luck. HRRN, of course, the coverage will pick up this afternoon and tomorrow. Everything you could want, Sirius XM, and a lot of Sirius XM action. I'm going to be on a couple of different Mad Dog connections. We'll give you reports as the weekend unfolds, and we'll be at Prime Rib later tonight with Tina, and we thank Buzz Baylor and G&M tomorrow in Linthicum Heights, so we get everybody in. Want to thank Cole Ranch, and we'll talk more about Cole next week. We've got the Virginia Equine Alliance, of course, the Pennsylvania Breeders, the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, and everybody that makes it possible to come to venues like this and bring you the coverage. If you missed anything, check the website. Casey will have the 3 hours up. And I want to thank Nick Hahn and Frank Vespi, Don Johnson earlier, Jay Pribman, Nick Tamaro, Vance Hansen, Rich Migliori, Zoe Cadman, XPTV.com too, if you want to watch everything now underway. And Hammer, back with you Monday from home, and we'll recap Preakness 2018. Thanks, everybody. Best of luck. I'll make the multi-race plays. I'm only looking at races at the pick five, basically, 7 through 11. So I'll have that up shortly. Good luck.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 144th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Will Justify dominate again as a short-priced favorite, or will a long shot upend the apple cart? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide. And while you're there, open a new ExpressBet account and check out our sensational new account offers, including a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.